I'm going to ask you to take a breath. Remember to let it out, okay? And take another breath. And let's listen to this beautiful song created by Karen Drucker, shared by Karen and her good buddy, David Hall.
Stand before you, knowing we are one. You are the mirror of my soul. I stand before you, honoring the part of you that is whole.
Sing with us now.
I stand.
Thank you, Karen Drucker and David Ault. My friend David Ault is one of those individuals who is so clearly living his purpose on planet Earth. He's been doing what he does as a visionary and a difference maker in the world for over 30 years. It would take all morning to tell you about all that he has done, all that he continues to do. So instead, you can go to davidault.com and find out for yourself. But right now, here he is, live from Atlanta, Reverend Dr. David Ault. Come to the house.
I stand before you.
I stand before you.
Oh, my beautiful friend. Before anything, I want to let everyone know the main reason why I am here today. And when I stood from afar virtually and saw your ordination and recognized for myself and my memory all that led up to my own path of that, all the work involved, all of the seen and unseen activity that goes into something so monumental. And top of that, your birthday is in a couple of days. I wanted to do something. I wanted people to know what you personally, Britt, mean to me. It is said that we are a lucky individual if we can live our lives knowing that there are close friends that we can count on one hand. And I want you to know that there have been times when you have filled all five digits. You have been a friend beyond a friend. You have loved me through challenging times. You have made me laugh more than probably anyone that I have ever encountered. And you have listened with a compassionate ear. And so my gift this morning is, what can I give you? And I know that this is barely a scratch on what you have given me, but I'm just here to give you, and I'm here to give Unity of New York, which has equally loved me for so many, many years, just the gift of whatever wisdom wants to come through today. It's a tiny gift compared to what you have given me, but that's why I'm here, and that's what I want people to know in terms of how I feel about you. So I stand before you just in awe and in gratitude for everything that you have gifted in my life.
Wow, I'm blown away, thank you. What David Alt just said to me is recorded. It is now in recorded. And we promised each other a long time ago that on our deathbeds, whoever's on his first, the other one will show up so we could do nothing but laugh. That be 12 years old and laugh. Perhaps laugh ourselves to death. But I am not well. Yes, that is, your wisdom is no small thing. And I know that you have your own thing coming up every Sunday at noon. So now that you've totally made me cry, I'm so grateful for you and so grateful you're with us today to share your wisdom and your insights and your heart. So thank you, my friend David.
Happy birthday, my friend.
Thank you. 2 days, and I'll finish that 60th.
I know, it's in what, 2 days?
Finish the 60th trip around the sun.
I don't want to rush the new decade just yet, but it's close.
Okay, I'll be singing Welcome to the 60s from Hairspray. I'll be doing some Hairspray on Tuesday.
There you go. So, great love, anyway, thank you.
Take it away, I love you.
So earlier this summer, I was at a friend's property that is lakeside, and a beautiful place, and we were in his backyard area overlooking the vast waterway, and he looked up into the sky and he said, oh my God, there's a vulture. And then he went, oh my God, no, there's two turkey vultures. And he said, thank God. And I thought that was the strangest reply to his observation. And he pointed out where the birds were, because I wasn't really familiar with what a vulture looks like. But he said, thank God. And I was like, why did you say thank God that vultures are here? Because in my mindset, I had this stereotypical understanding of what a vulture was based upon cartoons, based upon old movies like Westerns. Do you remember in these movies where the cowboy is searching frantically, futilely for water within the desert, and you sort of see the trail in the sand where his hat has been dropped and then his bag has been dropped, and he's on his last breaths and he looks up in the sun blazing sky and you see these birds hovering over him. And there's this fist in the air going, you won't take me, kind of thing. And it sort of led us to believe that vultures were this ominous creature that were there to leech off of us and to be some kind of doomsday symbol. And so I said to my friend, I said, why did you say, thank God that the vultures are here? And he goes, don't you understand what vultures do? He goes, they're one of the most powerful levelers of our ecosystem. And thus, a wisdom lesson on not just the vulture itself, but the symbology of the vulture. And so he told me that a vulture, number one, does not prey on its own. That's big. In other words, when another bird dies, it will not consume another bird. A vulture does not eat any other or attack any other living thing. It waits for the animal to expire, and then it begins to feed off of the carcass. What's amazing about that is that it then the purification of the ecosystem. It's a part of the purification of the landscape, which is really important when you think about how something that is decaying can bring upon many other things and cause a chain of disease. Here's another remarkable thing about a vulture, that even if the vulture feeds on a carcass that has some type of disease, that the digestive enzymes within that bird somehow purify so that when it expels that, it does not leave any of that bacteria. I mean, on and on and on, these things that my friend was telling me about the value of a vulture and how important they are to our ecosystem. And he also said this, he said, do you know that a vulture is generous? There are times when, let's say that the vulture or the team or the family of vultures come upon a large carcass, say like a cow, it will go and it will notify other birds of prey that there is food. It has this natural desire to want to share its a bounty. And I was just like, what? Because all that I could think of was those images within the cartoon, or those images in those Westerns, or the fact that even in our vernacular today, we use the word vulture in a negative sense. We talk about people who are culture vultures, who are misappropriate other cultures. And so it's never looked upon as something as an elevated symbology. But when you go, if you're interested in animal totems, if you go and you begin to research what a vulture does, and you look at its symbology as an animal totem, the scientific name for this bird is called the golden purifier. The golden purifier. I want you to just think about that terminology for a minute and to think about all of the other things that are representative of the golden purifier. So the scientific name of a turkey vulture, or sometimes known as a buzzard, is a golden purifier. All of the things that I just told you. It purifies, it does not feed on its own. It shares, it brings a balance and an integration into the ecosystem. So I started to think about all of the divine examples that exist within our realm of comprehension. And I cannot help but think about Jesus the Christ. When I think about the symbology of the crucifixion and the resurrection, it's very much in alignment with that which is a golden purification, because what we have been taught and what we understand is that the symbology of the crucifixion and what Jesus, this master teacher, was exhibiting was consuming the sin, consuming the mistake, the across the board humanity's mistake, taking all of that in and doing what? Purifying it. Showing us that there is something beyond the veil of illusion. Showing us that there is no such thing as loss. Showing us that our ideology around death is a false narrative. And in the example of that story, we realize that you cannot have a crucifixion without a resurrection. And we realize that you can't have a resurrection without a crucifixion, meaning that there are old things that must be died, that must die. There must be things that must be purified. There must be identities that we allow ourselves to discard so that they can be consumed, so that there can be a transfiguration, right? I start to think about the other examples. Perhaps you've heard of Amma, the hugging saint. She is very famous in Hindu culture in India. And Amma is known as the hugging saint because what she does is she hugs people. And if you've read any interviews by her, she is estimated now in her life to have hugged over some many millions of people. And she never tires. The only way that they get her to cease the activity of hugging is that those who are in her team tell her it's time to stop, because she says that when she begins her work, that she taps into what she termed universal source, the life force. And she just lends herself into being it. And as she hugs people, even for a brief few seconds, that what she is doing, her aim, is to consume that which is the darkness, to consume the dead ideology, to consume the illusion so that the person feels free. Very much like the vulture. It reminds me of Baba Ram Das when he would talk about his guru, Maharaji, also in India. And he said there were many times when Westerners would come over and they would sit at the feet of this master, and those who were local would sit at the feet of this master. And he said when he could get really quiet and observe, he could see vibratorily the way in which Maharaji, and this is his terminology, would eat the karma of other people. In other words, he would consume the suffering. He would consume the ideology of separation, the false narrative. He would consume that, leaving in this spaciousness within the people. And perhaps they had no idea what was going on, but what he was doing was acting as a vessel for purification. And so I had to laugh because I thought, what would it be like if we all started to walk around with t-shirts that said, I'm a spiritual vulture? Because most people wouldn't understand what that was. I taught a wisdom school once a month, and yesterday the people who were in my class, as I shared this insight with them, they were like, yeah, I want to get a shirt that says I'm a spiritual vulture. And I said, well, that means that you will have to explain that shirt. But I like that. Are you willing to lean into giving yourself over to being someone who is a golden purifier? Someone who has the willingness to look beyond appearances. Someone who understands the true meaning of nothing is as it seems. Because as metaphysicians, what we are taught is that all of that out there is a world of effect, and that everything that is presented to us is a part of the spiritual curriculum, a part of why you and I have incarnated into this lifetime, me as David, you as you, in order to participate. And if you're going to participate, then take the curriculum. And the curriculum means we do not hide from, we do not bury our heads in the sand, but we act as instruments of purification, first for ourselves. We must become clear within our minds that we are instruments, that we are absorbed in breathing as instruments of God, that which is infinite intelligence is what we are, to the degree of our willingness to participate, to the degree of leaning in and surrendering and dropping story, dropping precious identification, dropping our righteousness sometimes that inhibits our ability to be able to see and to connect, to continue to shed to let our karma be eaten, to be consumed, to let the ama energy hug us so much that we remember, to allow ourselves to let that which wants to die, die. And so this is the roadmap. This is the class that you and I, as spiritual beings, have signed up for. And I was working with a teacher a couple of weeks ago, and it was the first time that I had ever heard anyone refer to coronavirus as medicine. And he put it this way. He said, you know, there are many things that have been medicinal in my reawakening. And he said, nothing as potent as the medicine of coronavirus. And I went, ooh, I love that. Because you see, anything that is on the path is our teacher. In fact, the obstacle is the path. In fact, the obstacle is the teacher. And there's such a collective viewpoint that this thing, this global reset that we are all participating in, is something that we long to be over. And yet my friend gave me a beautiful reframe when he said, no, I see the coronavirus as medicine. He said, nothing has been more powerful in getting my attention for me to reevaluate why I'm here on the planet, for me to come to terms with what I am once and for all willing to let dissolve. Coronavirus has been the medicine that has metaphorically pushed so many of us into a corner where we had to re-examine our loyalties. Do I want to be loyal to a story that has limitation? Or do, as the affirmation so beautifully shared in the beginning about faith, do I want to become someone who doesn't talk about faith from an intellectual standpoint, but practices living it from the portal of the heart, the very essence of choice, the very essence of action, the very essence of word language? That I do not reside in the intellect, that I keep migrating down. And so, in essence, what we are called to be is purifiers. We are called to be like that vulture. One of the things that I loved when I looked up the animal totem was that it said it did not eat its own. It made me think about sadness that I have felt when I have witnessed so many people within the spiritual world who have somehow wanted to tell other people that the way that they are doing it, doing life, the way that they are processing, the way that they are advocating is not enough. That there has been this sort of judgment that you need to do it this way, you need to do it my way. And in many ways, the only term that I could come up with was that was sort of a form of spiritual cannibalism. Why would we eat our own? Why would we not champion each other to find our particular lane where we excel and then up-level, uplift everyone in order to enhance that expression, because all lanes are necessary in the traveling road of life. It's not supposed to look the same. One's advocacy should not mirror mine. It should be the advocacy that they feel drawn to. So some of us will advocate through marching. Some of us will advocate through prayer. Some of us will advocate through, hopefully many of us, through self-examination of our bias. Many of us will advocate in feeding and serving people. There is no wrong way to advocate. And so, like the vulture, let us not feed on someone else of our own, but let us help every be this purification, this transfiguration of the darkness of the thing that is ready to be reborn for the planet. I had I don't know if I want to call it a vision or a dream, but it was a deep, deep, strong impression about a month ago. And you don't have to take it literal. You can pick the pieces of it that speak to you. But in this, there was a there was this knowing that the experience that we're having, the medicine of the coronavirus that is wanting to work with us, would calm. And by next spring, the world as we knew it would somehow begin to adjust back into that familiar rhythm. That means that it would have been about a year from March of 2020 to spring of 2021. And that those people who took this year allowed it to sort of be their fallow season. By fallow season, agriculturally, I'm talking about the way in which you don't keep planting things or doing things over and over and over in the soil. You let the soil remineralize. You let it regenerate. So if we did that with our own lives, if we allowed ourselves to use this window of time as medicine to come to terms with what's important, to devote ourselves to move our passions from the back burner to the front burner, to do all of the things that allow us the beauty of stillness and the examination that comes from that pause. That if we took advantage of this time, that by next spring, there would be sort of a majestic harvest. You know, it said you can't hurry the harvest. And so there is a process. There is a process between the ideology being planted to the germination that happens and then the harvest that comes. We don't hurry the harvest. And if we were all conscious and aware of this time and utilized it optimally, then what we would experience would be somewhat reminiscent of a Renaissance. And then in this vision impression, there was also that those who continued to fight tooth and nail for what was theirs, those who tried to hold on to same, same, you know, to try to keep things locked in, that it isn't that it would be doom and gloom, but that it would just be perpetuating the same old, same old. That this massive opportunity would be lost. And so I want to share with you today that you hold the power of purification within you. That purification starts with being conscious, being mindful of what it is that you're thinking. That purification starts with championing one another, not feeding off of them, not being a spiritual cannibal and judging other people, but allowing them their process. That purification starts with the level of service that you are willing to give. That purification starts with your own calming. That purification starts with a return to your own compassion for yourself and realizing just how amazing you are to have signed up to be alive in this time. Yes, you. You chose to be alive in this time because you are the perfect steward of that purification. So imagine, you know, it says where two or more are gathered. Imagine if our communities, our conscious communities, began to take this seriously, began to bring this into that sacred space and said, yes, yes, I will be this. Then there would be that tangible shift. And as Gandhi said, we would see the change that we wish upon the world. My love to you. I want to champion. Brit is my spiritual vulture. You see, I couldn't have said that in the beginning because you wouldn't have understood the context. But I love you. Your community has uplifted me countless times. I can't tell you how rich every visit to New York has been. You hold sacred space within my heart. And I see nothing but amazing expansion, love, and and pure, pure heart for everyone who crosses into your field of awareness. Thank you for your time today. God bless.
Ah, wow. So I look taller. I'm lifted. I'm lifted up. Can you hear me, David?
You're my vulture.
I'm your vulture. And don't you forget it. You know, you know how much I love you as a friend and as a person, but I tell you, every time you teach, I'm like a sponge. The way you share your wisdom and express and your heart, I'm just blown away. And thank you for you have this amazing ability to reframe something where it's in a totally new lens, not just me being a vulture, but
coronavirus as medicine. Isn't that great?
That's really great.
I love that.
That's really great. And that's, I love that you brought up AMA. I've gotten some good hugs from AMA. A lot of Unity of New York people have. We've sung for her before. A lot of us have sung for her before. And it's, wow, it is just an otherworldly experience. Yet in the middle of that, I have always wondered, I can't help it, you know me. I'm always wondering, when does she go to the bathroom? Because she doesn't leave.
I know.
It's like she doesn't move for days at a time. I'm like, when does she go to the bathroom?
I think at last count, they had estimated that she had hugged over 15 million people. 15 million.
You want to talk about changing the world. Hugging is her ministry. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Listen, you know me. I'm Chatty Cathy. I could hold you hostage and keep you here. I know you have something to do. But before you go.
Yes.
Before you go, I want to share something with everybody who may not be aware that you are also the founder of Kaleidoscope Child Foundation, which is so important. And I want to just tell you a little bit about this. The mission for all of you, David knows this, but I want you all to know the mission of Kaleidoscope Child Foundation is to advance vulnerable children and communities worldwide with sustainable education, life skills, fresh water. It began more than 15 years ago, and Kaleidoscope now operates in Siem Reap, Cambodia, Putrajaya, Lankanpur, India, and partners with literacy programs throughout Guatemala, serving more than 1,000 children annually. So I'm not only proud of the work you do around the world with Kaleidoscope, I'm grateful for it. I'm so grateful for it, which is why, you know what? You know that Unity of New York is a supporter. And you know how I am about win-win situations, the reciprocality of giving and receiving. So today, Unity of New York is tithing forward a check for $1,000 to provide it for foundation, and I got goosebumps. Look!
Do you know what this means? Do you know what this means? We have a matching grant of $15,000, and we were so close. This is going to bring it almost to the tipping point, and we needed it by the end of this month. Yay!
How much more? How much more do you need on top of this?
I don't know. I'll have to go do the math. I'll hold it with you. Close.
The check is in the mail. Holla!
Thank you all.
Holla!
Ow! Woo! All right, I gotta go. I love
you. Thank you, darling. We love you so much. And we're not finished with David yet. He had to leave. We're not finished with him yet this morning. And I want you to know this is kind of a little tip before we actually kick off the 2021 pledge partnership. David will be back with us early in the year as a pledge benefit to do a Saturday workshop with us like he's done a couple of times. So grateful for David. And I want to share one more thing about David with you. But I told you earlier when I introduced him, he's done so much that it would take the entire service to tell you about it. But I do want to tell you about Alliance. I don't know how many of you have heard of Alliance. This is just one more little piece about David's life. Throughout the 1980s, David, along with the late Jerry Florence and Keith Kimberlin, made their mark in New Thought history by helping pioneer an unexplored musical genre, visionary vocal positive music. And their trio was known as Alliance. They were trailblazers when introducing original music specifically designed to support the metaphysical teachings that life reflects our thoughts. This was at the very beginning of Louise Hay's ministry. David and Louise were very close. She was like a mother to him. And they toured with Louise Hay in the 80s on what was known as the Hayride. I love that. And Alliance's legendary blend and their musical message really helped establish them as one of the most successful vocal groups in the spiritual recording field. And Leo, you all know the incredible work that Leo continues to do with videos. Well, David found some old recordings of Alliance from the 80s and asked Leo if he would make them into videos somehow. And so they collaborated. And so today's meditation is, it's a song by Alliance from 1988. So I want you to just take a breath right now. Breathing is so important. I know I remind you a lot, but don't we forget to do it sometimes, especially when we get all flustered and uptight about something. Right now, let anything and everything go. Sit up tall. Open up that space around your heart and allow yourself to just experience the music as a meditation. Allow yourself to be awakened to love.
I am awakened.